Gators Breakdown, the Gators fan podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SCC, and it is rivalry week. It is Florida Tennessee week, and with that, my first guest tonight, this episode of Gators Breakdown, to help preview this Florida Tennessee matchup, is managing editor for Last Word on College Football and Tennessee Volunteer fan, Mike LaValle. Mike, we've had you on Gators Breakdown the last couple of seasons breaking this game down, and I want to thank you again for coming on here and doing it all over again.
Dave, it's always a pleasure to join Gators Breakdown. Love what you've got here with Gators Breakdown.
Yeah, it's, you and I, we go back some time with Mark Rogers, and we started this venture as SEC Breakdown, but that was a whole lot of time consumption. So when that kind of was done, I was like, you know what? I'll keep that Breakdown name and just put Gators in front of it.
You've done great. You've done great there at Gators Breakdown. I really enjoy seeing the success you're having there.
Thank you, Milton. And of course, as I said, you can catch Mike and his team there at Last Word on College Football. We had Kevin McGuffey on a couple weeks ago, previewing the Florida-Kentucky matchup. So, you know, Mike, good work that you guys have there going on, you know, covering many teams in college football. And of course, you cover, you got the Tennessee side of things, Kevin with Kentucky, or some Florida covers there, a lot of other teams in college football covered there, in college football in general.
Yeah, we try to go across the college landscape. We cover almost as many teams as we can. We don't have a full complement yet. But check us out, lastwordoncollegefootball.com, and check me out at MikeL_LWS on Twitter. Gladly field some questions from any of your viewers, Gator fan viewers, at any time.
Yeah, heck yeah, heck yeah. There we go. Mike, not too long ago, you and I joined Mark Rogers to discuss our history with the Florida-Tennessee game, and you know, talked about our favorite memories and such, and how important this rivalry is for both schools. So everybody, if you want to go out there, go to Mark Rogers TV on YouTube, and you can see Mike and they're having some fun with this rivalry.
Yeah, it's a little bit more fun for you and your team than it is for us. But it is a great rivalry. It's a modern rivalry. It's not the historic SEC rivalry as maybe Florida Georgia or Auburn Georgia or Tennessee Alabama is. But it is what I call a modern SEC rivalry, and a lot of drama there. Some intrigue with the facts gate. Some horribly blown calls. Gaffney still did not catch the ball.
Mike, about that too. I was listening to Steve Spurrier on Sirius Radio today. Even he admits it wasn't a catch.
Oh yeah, I mean I know. And Ron Zook has admitted that he received the facts. So I mean, you know, it's all out there. Some bad calls. Some great players: Peyton Manning, Danny Werfel, Tim Tebow. Some great players on both sides of the ball. So you know, and it kind of, you know, the ups and downs of college football. So I think this rivalry, for being a modern rivalry, really has a lot of great aspects in it. Two fan bases that don't really like each other very much, and that's okay. That's kind of the spirit of college football. But yeah, it's a great modern rivalry. It's a rivalry that you and I grew up in. Sometimes it's kind of hard to get in touch with those old school rivalries that maybe don't have the relevancy that they do today. You think back Nebraska, Oklahoma, that used to be a great rivalry, but you know, it was a little bit before our time. Some other rivalries like that. But this is a rivalry that you and I grew up with. So you know, we can touch this, we can feel this rivalry. So I'm excited. You know, it's Florida Hate Week in Tennessee, and it's Tennessee Hate Week in Gainesville. So this is really what college football is all about. Excited to renew this rivalry yet again.
All righty. And later on in this episode, Neil Blackman from Saturday Down South will join in and discuss his latest article and why this is the biggest Florida-Tennessee game in the last decade. But before we get there, we'll preview the Tennessee Volunteers with Mike. But remember, you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes, as well as articles from the News for Jax sports team. That's news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. And find Gators Breakdown on iTunes, Google Play, here live on YouTube, or you can go back and watch the video version on YouTube if you want, and catch us on social media for Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. So, Mike, coming in to this game, it's really tough to know where these teams are coming into this game. Neither's looked all that great against the one Power 5 team they've faced, and of course Florida in conference with Kentucky and Tennessee with West Virginia in the opener. It's also hard to know what to take away from the two opponents they've both should blow out, and they did. Are you like me in looking at this game that it's tough to get a read on what we'll see Saturday night?
Yeah, I really am. I think for Tennessee fans, it's a little bit harder to get a read. A lot of new guys coming in. Of course, as soon as I say that, Brandon Kennedy, transfer offensive lineman from Alabama, come in. I thought he was going to be the most important guy that transferred in. He's injured after the second week of practice, or the week after the first game of practice, so he's not there. Keller Chris, transfer from Stanford. He is clearly the number two quarterback. Jared Guarantano has taken command of the starting quarterback role, so he's not really in there. Mondre London is one of the four cadre there at running back, so they got a pretty deep group of running backs. But I think the big transfer is Dominique Wood Anderson there at tight end. I think he's going to be a key to this game. So the reason I say that is because I've contended ever since spring ball that the Tennessee team this year is going to look a lot different in November than it looks in September. We still really don't know what we have on our hands with Tennessee. Go back to West Virginia, a lot of mental mistakes on offense to start the game, and a lot of defensive breakdowns in the second half to finish the game. But there has been a little bit of improvement. If you watch the film, a little bit of improvement from week one to week two and week two to week three. I still don't think Tennessee fans are comfortable that they know the identity with this team or the potential of this team. Is it a 3-win team, or is it possibly a 6 or 7-win team? I don't think we know that yet. They're in Knoxville. I really think it's a little bit harder for Tennessee fans. I think Florida has a little bit more of a consistency from last year as far as the players go and the talent level. So I really think it's harder, a little bit harder for Tennessee fans to know what they have now. Again, I think the Vols are a team that's going to look a lot different November after this coaching staff gets what amounts to two times as much practice time during the regular seasons as they've had during spring ball and fall camp. I really think the Vols will look a lot different when they play Kentucky, Missouri, and Vanderbilt than they look week one against West Virginia, and then they're going to look week four against Florida.
Go back to week one, Mike, and it was the marquee game so far for Tennessee, and we're able to hang around for a half with West Virginia, but kind of the offensive woes from last year crept back up, and too many maybe dinks and dunk passes, not enough big plays. You got to hit big plays if you're going to keep up with West Virginia, a little from the running game outside Tim Jordan's run there, but Guarantano, respectable, 19 of 25, but only 172 yards. So you're going back to that game just in case Florida fans missed it or whatever. As I said, close in the first half, but then kind of the rails fell off in the second.
Yeah, but pretty efficient offense. I think Guarantano was definitely the best offensive player of the day there. The offensive line struggled a little bit more than what I thought against the West Virginia defense that quite frankly surprised me a little bit, particularly their pressure up front, their nose guard. Defensive tackle up front there just created havoc in the backfield, and our offensive line just wasn't able to handle that. Guarantano looked good. The defense managed well up until the midway through the third quarter, and then Will Greer got on fire and just kind of carved up the defensive secondary. A lot of young guys in our defensive secondary, and he took advantage of pretty much every mistake they made in the second half, particularly on the corner blitz. The safeties weren't able to get to cover the deep half or on the side where the safety blitz, and he had three or four big time plays all off one defensive call, the corner blitz where the safety wasn't able to get over and provide that over the top coverage. So yeah, it was a little bit of a disappointing start for Tennessee fans. At halftime, we thought there was some hope of us pulling out the upset, even after a very sluggish offensive start. But West Virginia pulled away in the second half, and Tennessee fans, after a rain delay at halftime, West Virginia pulled away in the second half, and Tennessee fans left Charlotte pretty disappointed, and kind of resigned to another rebuilding year, as opposed to maybe an impactful first year under new head coach Jeremy Pruitt.
All right, we'll start there at quarterback with Guarantano. And I put this stat out there on the last episode of Gators Breakdown, and pretty impressive here. One of four quarterbacks without an interception in the SEC this year, and only below Jake Fromm for his percentage of completed passes. Jake Fromm at 80.4, Guarantano was 72.2. So he's taking care of the ball there and completing the passes. And under Pruitt, we probably thought we might see this power run team and then hit, try and hit the big plays through play action and stretch the field vertically there. Guarantano, a little bit of RPOs in the offense now from what I've seen and looking at it. So it'd be interesting if they try and open up this passing game versus Florida. The yardage isn't really there in the passing game so far. And maybe Tyson Helton maybe coming in, maybe dialing up some quick throws to help Guarantano and the offensive line.
Yeah, well, I think well, first of all, Goran Tarna has looked the best offensive player to me through the first three games. I don't think any player looks more better than last year than Jarrett Garantano. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what a quarterback coach will do for a quarterback. So it's great to have a quarterback coach on the staff there. He looks really good, very efficient. You mentioned the stats, very efficient, not big yards, but that's okay. I think the biggest problem with the passing game so far has been the lack of confidence in the ability of the offensive line to protect Garantano, to give him 3 or 4 seconds of protection to go downfield. And that's why you see a lot of 10-yard outs, a lot of 6-yard outs, and a lot of passes to the running back side of the backfield. But I think Tennessee's passing game can be effective. They've got a lot of talent on the outside. Mm-hmm. Juwan Jennings and Marquez Callaway are big bodies. You can depend on those guys when it's 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5. You can throw the out route, and you know that their bodies are big enough. They can shield the defender, and you can trust them to make the catch. Guarantano has been very accurate on everything inside 15 yards. And then you have two guys who have shown deep play ability so far, Josh Palmer and Brandon Johnson, with speed, tall guys, and all four of those guys, Callaway, Jennings, Palmer, and Johnson, can all be effective weapons in the red zone. They're all tall guys, and they're all pretty well-built frames that can go up and high point the ball and can be used in the red zone. And then you add in Dominique Wood Anderson, who is a tremendous athlete. I think you're going to see a lot of him on Saturday, particularly exploiting that middle, because I think Florida is going to bring some pressure, and I think that's going to leave some space across the middle. I look to Guarantano to target Wood Anderson quite a bit on Saturday.
You mentioned maybe no better player than Guarantano from last year. And Tennessee only had 4 plays of at least 50 yards last year, 5 so far this season, and Guarantano is involved with 2 of those.
Right. And here's going back to Guarantano. Yeah, the offense has shown the potential to be much better than last year. Again, it all revolves around the offensive line. But and I'm sure this isn't the case, but it's looked like, particularly in the first 2 games, that Guarantano was on a no-run mandate. Mm-hmm. He did have 6 rushes against UTEP last week. I think 4 of those were called runs. So it's going to be interesting to see if Guarantano is utilized in the run game more than he has the first 3 games. The play calling for games 2 and games 3, East Tennessee State, UTEP, were extremely conservative, which is fine. Tennessee came out and did what they needed to do against those 2 teams. They didn't look great against UTEP, but it was a very, very conservative playbook. I think probably 15 total plays were called in the game. You know, those plays were called multiple times, and they were all pretty much base plays, maybe for the exception of 1 or 2 of those, but very conservative. So it's going to be interesting to see if Guarantano is utilized more in the run game against Florida, something that we haven't really seen on film yet from this coaching staff.
Speaking of the run game and with the running backs this time, 345 yards last week against UTEP. So there's a chance, you know, the ground game may have found its, you know, big time groove last week and get going against, a Florida defense that 2 weeks ago didn't look so good against Kentucky. You know, that's to be nice about it. So Tennessee probably has to at least try and run the ball first with this running game and see where it gets them. And who do you think may get the bulk of the carries out of Ty Chandler, Tim Jordan, and Madre London?
Yeah, you got to throw Jeremy Banks in there. Tennessee's got really a 4-man rotation there between those 4 guys. I will tell you, going back to last week, I took a little bit of heat in my game grades article that I put out after every game. You know, I gave the running backs a C. 345 yards sounds impressive, but then it was on 50 carries. So, you know, you do the math, and then 81 of those yards came on 1 play. So if you take that away, you got 260 yards on 49 carries, which comes out to about 5 yards a carry. Look, UTEP is a bad, bad team. They're probably the worst FBS team in all of FBS. They're really bad. So it was an okay day, I think, rushing, but I wouldn't let that 345 yards carry the day. I think when you take the 181 yard run out of it and then consider the 240 yards on 49 carries, You know, when you're a team like Tennessee in the SEC and you're playing a team as bad as UTEP, if you can't get 225 yards or 240 yards on 49 carries, then there's something really wrong. You know, I think they'll probably try to establish the run, and they got four good running backs. I think you'll probably try to – I think you'll see Ty Chandler and Tim Jordan probably get the bulk of the carries early. You know, I think to establish the run, I think they're going to utilize a lot of screens. And they're going to throw to the running backs out of the backfield to kind of loosen up what I think is going to be a pressure attack from the Florida defense. Ty Chandler is the big play threat at running back. Tim Jordan would be the number two guy. Banks and London are more tough yardage, short yardage guys. They can break off 15, 20, 25-yard runs, but they don't have the explosiveness that Ty Chandler has particularly, and then Tim Jordan behind him. So I think early in the game, you're going to see Ty Chandler and Tim Jordan get the majority of the plays, possibly some off-tackle stuff, and then possibly screens out of the backfield to try to break a big play. But you know, I'm not convinced with this offensive line that we'll be able to establish an effective running game, even seeing what Kentucky did against your front seven. I'm not convinced we're going to be able to do it.
Yeah, you know, Florida was out of position. A lot of those plays didn't take the right angles out of their lanes, you know, and definitely issue number one was tackling, missed tackles, you know, getting making contact but not wrapping up. So, no, what back would scream more of? And also going back to last year's Florida-Tennessee game, you know, this Florida linebacker core is a lot of the same guys there, and they couldn't tackle Kelly from last year, John Kelly, the running back last year, who torched Florida in the second half of that game. You know, if Tennessee starts playing that style of ball where they want to isolate a running back on a linebacker, who might that running back be?
Well, I think to isolate him in the running game, I think you're looking at Jeremy Banks and then Madre London. Those are the guys that can really wear down a defense. Again, I think you're going to see Chandler and Jordan early, early and often in the first and second quarters, and then you'll see a lot of heavy, and particularly if Tennessee can get a lead, you'll see a heavy dose of Banks and London in the third quarter to try to wear that defense down. And then you go back to the big play guys and try to break off a game-breaking 60-yard run with Chandler and Palmer. So, but the bottom line is I think you're going to see all four running backs and you're going to see them rotate it through quite frequently. And they're going to try to present different looks. But again, going back to the running game performance, as with the passing game performance, Tennessee's ability to win on Saturday will come down to the performance of the offensive line. A stable of four really good running backs, a quarterback who's looked good, and some talented receivers. It's all going to come down, however, to the offensive line. Can they open a hole? Can they keep the defensive front four for Florida out of the backfield? And can they pass protect for Guarantano to give him time to find those talented receivers downfield?
Mike, of course, the Florida offensive line is much maligned as well, much like, you know, Tennessee there. And you know, from the Florida side of things, it's, you know, we look at it as a mentality getting left over from Jim McElwain and those guys having to come around to that. It's the third offensive line coach in 3 years. And you know, they're learning a new system. They're learning on the fly. What seems to be the issue of the Tennessee offensive line? Is it a mentality? Is it more of a lack of physical presence? Is it a lack of toughness? What do you see the issue there?
Well, yeah, you know, I don't think it's a lack of wantingness or necessarily a lack of physicality. I think it's a lack of physicalness rather than physicality. You know, they've got to get bigger and they've got to get better. But you know, they've got to execute. You go back and look at some of the films on their blocking, and they just they're missing their assignments. Tennessee's not running a zone read blocking exclusively now with the change of the offense. So, you know, they did have to learn new schemes. Tyson Helton's offense does keep some zone blocking in there. So, you know, the offensive linemen have to learn both. But then there's the stability. They've already had to move a couple, you know, they had to move a guy to center to cover for Brandon Kennedy and then move some guys there. So you got to learn different positions. But again, you're in the SEC. You're gonna have to win those battles in the trenches. And Tennessee's offensive line is not winning those, not because they don't want to, but they just have to get bigger, they have to get stronger, and they just have to get, quite frankly, you gotta get a little bit meaner too. So it's not necessarily physicality as it is just a physical presence and being able to win that battle on the offensive line.
All right. Mike LaValle from Last Word on College Football joining us here on Gators Breakdown, previewing these Tennessee Volunteers. And we'll move to the other side of the ball, Mike. And defensively, Tennessee looked a little more comfortable in its third game in this new system and Jeremy Pruitt's system at that, you know, albeit against the weaker competition. But, you know, a shutout is always impressive. And, of course, you know, many expected Tennessee to struggle West Virginia in that passing attack early in the year. But let's be fair. Many defenses would out there. So, Mike, where have you seen improvement on the defensive side of the ball from game one to game three, no matter who the opponent is?
Well, from game one to game three, the defensive backs, I think, were the biggest improvement. You know, again, West Virginia's got a very potent offense. Kyle Loxley's a quarterback that has potential there at UTEP. Of course, he's the son of the Alabama offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And to hold him, you know, he's a dual threat quarterback, but he's got physical ability. But, and like you said, UTEP, I've told you already, UTEP's a bad team. But to hold any team in today's day and age to a shutout is an accomplishment. From game one to game three, I think the single best unit improvement has been the defensive backs. From last year to this year, I think our defensive front, our defensive line is better. Our run defense last year was atrocious, and that is about the best way you can say it. I think we're going to be better this year. This will be really our first test on whether or not our run defense is going to be better. I think Shai Tuttle looks great. I think Emmett Gooden is on his way to being impactful. If we could just get a pass rush from Jonathan Kongbo, the outside linebacker, taking a lot of heat as a bust. He hasn't really put up any numbers. I think we'll be able to make some moves. But as far as the defensive line goes, I think those guys are probably the biggest improvement from last year to this year. As far as game one to game three, it's the defensive backfield. A lot of young guys back there. A lot of young guys talented. But in the backfield, if you miss your assignment, you just gave up a 60-yard touchdown. So, you know, it's very magnified back there.
Yeah, and, you know, and going back to last year, the starting corners are gone, but safeties Nigel Warrior and Micah Abernathy, you know, finished second and third on the tackling last season, and they're up there in the top four in tackling so far this year as well. What's the story on the defensive backfield so far this season as the safeties are actually leading the way and kind of leading that group?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, and you kind of pick that up out of the stat line. But I really think both of those guys have kind of had a little bit of a disappointing season so far. Particularly Nigel Warrior, you know, he was a guy I looked at to come into the season and really break out and have a conference, maybe an all conference level, an all conference type of season. He's got tremendous ability. He's a legacy guy there at Tennessee. His dad was an All Pro defensive back in the NFL for many years. I think when you look at those stats, those might be the things that pop off on the paper, but really I think those two guys have kind of underperformed a little bit, particularly in the passing in the pass defense scheme. When your safeties are your leading tacklers, that's not as bad as your cornerbacks being leading tacklers, but it's not ideal for your team. You'd really like those two.
I'm glad you said that, because that was one thing I did notice last year, but you mentioned it with the defensive line not being so up to par, then it falls back on your safeties.
Right. In a 3-4 defense, you really want your middle linebackers to be the guys that rack up the tackles. So, you know, having the safeties as the leading tacklers is probably not the best stat to reflect where the defense is at. But, so we'll see. I think both of those guys have disappointed a little bit early in the season, particularly in the passing defense. To stop a conference that's a run-heavy conference, your safeties have to be able to step up and play in the run defense, and then those two guys have done that so far. So, again, going back to Tennessee fans, don't really know what they have. A little bit disappointment with the safeties, a little bit of, happiness that they're able to help out in a run game and a run defense that's getting better, hopefully. So, again, Tennessee fans don't really know what we have back there, but they have been a little bit disappointed, particularly in Nigel Warrior, in the passing defense department so far.
Of course, you mentioned you'd like to see your linebackers leading up there in tackles, and it's no surprise to see Darren Kirkland and Daniel Batuli leading their way up there. You know, that I think that's a good set of linebackers to do something with in this Jeremy Pruitt defense.
Yeah, Tennessee has some potential there, particularly Darren Kirkland Jr., who was out most of last year with an injury. Daniel Patulli, who looks really good so far early in the season. Will Ugnaught has looked good as well. They've got a linebacking core that can make some noise. I was a little bit, they were kind of absent during the West Virginia game. They really didn't show up on the stat sheet, and they really didn't make an impact in the game. They played much better against ETSU and still a little bit better against UTEP. And they'll be tested this week against Florida. And to a large degree, I think Tennessee's ability to stop Florida and prevent Florida from having long drives is going to come down to the linebackers. If Tennessee can focus, if the linebackers can stop the run and force Florida into a one-dimensional attack, I think Tennessee has a chance to win the game. But it's really going to come down to the front seven's ability to really clamp down and stop the Florida running attack. And that's really going to be up to the linebackers.
Mike, for Florida fans who haven't really got to see a whole lot of Tennessee, and going back to the spring, and now we're in, you know, rivalry week, big game, Jeremy Pruitt's first taste of Florida Tennessee. What's been the biggest, you know, positive takeaway from Jeremy Pruitt so far?
Accountability. I think if you ask 100 Tennessee fans, 98 of them will say accountability, and then the other two would say cornbread. But accountability. You know,
you have to explain cornbread after this.
Okay, fine. But accountability. There's no more cliches. There's no more brick by brick or champions of life.
Trash cans. No trash cans.
Turnover trash cans. He's not a marketer. He's not a salesman. He's not a program guy. You know what he is? He's a football coach. He really enjoys interacting with young men. He really enjoys coaching football. And he's the kind of guy, he's the kind of coach, if you saw him last week against UTEP, he's the kind of coach that that can get into a player's face and can really make the hard correction on a player, but the players understand where it's coming from. They understand that it's genuine. They understand that it's trying to get them better players and better guys. In the past, Tennessee – for the past few administrations at Tennessee, you've seen coaches who were kind of showboats, you know, not saying any names, or salesmen with gimmicks, or guys who, you know, wore orange pants. It was such a departure from what Tennessee has always been. Tennessee has always been a Tennessee school with a Tennessee guy, and they've always been about just football. And that's really what, you know, guys like me grew up in Tennessee. It was about football. It wasn't about showmanship. It wasn't LA football like USC and UCLA. And that, you know, that's not a derogatory statement. That's just kind of how, you know, the Hollywood football. It wasn't, you know, Big 12 football where it was all about throwing the ball around. It was about Tennessee football. And when we fired Philip Fulmer, you know, we went down that road of Lane Kiffin and then Derek Dooley and then Butch Jones, and we just got away from who we were. We got away from the identity of what Tennessee football is. And Kiffin and Dooley and Jones are all, you know, they've got their own resumes and they're coaches in their own right, but they weren't what Tennessee football was. Jeremy Pruitt, even though he's coming from Alabama, is getting back to kind of what the historical identity of Tennessee has been. Coaching football, not necessarily marketing, not necessarily salesmanship, nothing like that. Just Tennessee football, getting out there, getting on the playing field, on the practice field, and just playing football. And so accountability. He's referenced mistakes he's made. He's referenced mistakes coaches have made, and he'll talk about mistakes the players have made. And so he's accountable to the team. The team is accountable to the fan base, and everyone is accountable for their own performance. That hasn't been the way it has been around the program for a decade, and Tennessee fans are very happy to see that. As far as cornbread goes, that's his favorite food. That was one of the first questions he was asked, and he said cornbread. And you know, that was just kind of a funny anecdote. So 98 fans would tell you accountability, two fans would tell you cornbread. And of course the cornbread resonates with Tennessee fans, you know.
There we go. I'd be probably hard pressed to ask also if, what's your thoughts on Georgia, man? Of course, there's a common issue that we can come together on and not like too much, but it's Florida and Tennessee is going to have to get better pretty fast if they want to compete with those boys.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I know your next guest, I think, you know, Neil, he wrote the article about why this game's so important for both fan bases. You know, I think when you look at Georgia, that kind of sums up why this game's important. If you look at, I think, Florida, you guys have Mississippi State and LSU from the West this year. You know, no offense to your fan base, but you're not going to be the favorite in either one of those games. Tennessee has Auburn and Alabama out of the West. We're not going to be favorites in those games. I don't think either one of us are going to be favorites against Georgia. So this game is really important for Florida and Tennessee because it gives you that one conference win before you go into the brutal part of your schedule for Tennessee. We've got Georgia, Auburn, Alabama, South Carolina lined up. I think you guys have Mississippi State, LSU, and Georgia, three of your next four games. So it's vitally important. But when you talk about Georgia, you know, in the history of we talked about the rivalry earlier, the first 10 champions of the SEC East, since the SEC East was formed, were either Florida or Tennessee. When you talk about the history of the SEC East, it's really been a three-team division: Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia. Right now, there's no question in my mind, after Georgia's dismantling of South Carolina, this is a one-team division. It's Georgia and everyone else. In the past, it's always been Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, top three, and then the bottom four were always Missouri, Kentucky, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. And those four teams battled for spots four through seven, and the top three teams battled for spots one through three. I think today in the SEC East, Georgia is battling for position number one, and the other six teams are battling for positions two through seven. So Tennessee, college football is better. The SEC is better, and the SEC East is better when Tennessee and Florida are good, and we take back that third Saturday 3:30 CBS time slot. So yes, Georgia is in a league of their own, and Tennessee and Florida have their work cut out to catch up with them and get back to where the SEC East should be, where there's a strong Tennessee, a strong Florida, and a strong Georgia. Maybe just a little bit stronger Tennessee.
It'd be nice that, like you said, the rivalry can get back to what we saw in the 90s and the excitement. And as you said, of course, CBS starts their schedule a little bit earlier now since they don't cover tennis anymore. But we do know when the first time you heard that CBS theme song, it meant Florida, Tennessee was coming on. So yes, hopefully we get back to that point. You know, I don't mind the night games. It changes the feeling and everything every now and then, because it was not too long ago it was one of CBS's primetime games. You know, sometimes they put it on the primetime so early in the season now, and now that they kind of save that for LSU and Alabama every year. So. All right, Mike, I'm going to put you on the spot, only if you want to. If you want to do a prediction, you can throw it out there. If not, or if you go put an article out there, you can hype it that way.
Yeah, I don't really want to, but I guess it's part of my job. So Tennessee has shown me no reason that they should win this game. I think it's going to be kind of a back and forth, stop and start game. And I think there's going to be a lot of field goals. I think it's going to be 23-16 Florida, with maybe Tennessee having a little bit of a shot at the end to maybe make a fourth quarter drive and come up a little bit short. So that's kind of what I see. I hope I'm wrong, but we'll see on Saturday. Can't wait.
Yeah, should be, it's going to be, I don't know. I think both fan bases can't figure out where they're at right now. Looking at it as a whole, I think Florida fans can see reasons they're going to lose or win, and Tennessee fans can see reasons they're going to lose or win. So it's just, yeah. Yeah, I haven't made my full prediction yet either. But
I have zero confidence in my prediction, by the way.
I'm trying to figure out how to get Neil off the mute here.
Would not be taking that to the bank.
All right, let me see if I can figure that out. Mike, also looking through the rest of the year, you think it's Alabama, Georgia to finish the SEC this year?
I do. Here's the bottom line with Alabama. I think Georgia's clearly the team to beat the East. I mean, I don't see how you can argue otherwise.
Yeah.
With Alabama, even after losing eight guys on one side of the ball to the NFL draft, until somebody beats Alabama, until somebody wins the West other than Alabama, I'm not going against them. Yeah. That LSU defense looks good. LSU has surprised me. Auburn kind of looks sharp, even though they lost to LSU. They have the potential. I think Mississippi State might be a dark horse team in the West, and they have a tremendous defensive line. But Alabama's offense looks better than any Alabama offense in our generation, and their defense just kind of looks like every defense they have every year. Just kind of a top 10 defense every year. It's kind of ridiculous, but it's what every fan wants their own program to be. Just a machine. That's what they are. So yes, I think it's Alabama, Georgia.
All right. Mike, you want to stick around for a second if you want to, or I'll bring Neil in and we'll talk about his article of why this could, why this is the biggest Florida.
Happy to.
All right. Neil, how's it going?
It's going good, guys. How are you? You hear me?
I got you. Loud and clear. All right. Neil Blackman from Saturday Down South right here joins us. And he released an article this week entitled, "It Might Not Feel Like It, But This Is the Biggest Florida-Tennessee Game in a decade. So now we know neither team is ranked, but the last few years, the rivalry has had some intense on and off the field moments with fourth quarter comebacks, trash talk, a big Tennessee comeback to end the streak, the heat to Cleve last year. This rivalry's had it all in the last few seasons, Neil. But why is this one the biggest one in a decade?
I just think that the programs are so in such similar spots. And I think that these hires are two programs at really critical junctures. I don't want to say Tennessee has necessarily fallen off the cliff, although maybe when you go 0-8 in the SEC, you kind of have. And then Florida to go 3-5 in the SEC last year and then to lose to Kentucky and really to kind of be mired in mediocrity for the better part of a decade now. And I wrote at the beginning of the year, I think Florida's been lost in the wilderness since Tebow left, barring one good season. And so I think you have two programs at a crossroads and two fan bases that want to be confident in the person they hired. Neither hired their first choice. You know, I know they say there's never a second choice when you make a hire, but that's nonsense. We all know that's nonsense. You know, Pruitt wasn't Tennessee's first choice. Dan Mullen wasn't Scott Strickland's first choice. And so, you know, you're here, and this is about establishing in living rooms where your rebuild is. And you know, I think recruiting is everything in a rebuild. And I think this game matters for that reason. There's plenty of head-to-head battles which are happening between these two programs. And then the other thing is that they're in a division where they're looking up at this Death Star that Kirby Smart's building. And, you know, I think the impetus is on both programs to just sort of establish now that they're ahead of at least each other in terms of where the rebuild is. What's interesting to me is I think this game, having written the article that I did, I still think this game is more important for Tennessee than it is Florida, namely because I think Florida State is the most important game for Mullen in that recruiting and living room respect. And I think there's plenty of data that kind of bears that out. But that doesn't mean that a divisional game against a big rival can't be the biggest one we've had in 10 years. And I think just because of the similarities of where the programs are, Saturday night's huge.
What you think, Mike? Is it the biggest in the decade? One of the biggest in the decade?
Yeah, so I read Neil's article, and it's a great article. Really enjoy your stuff, Neil. I agree with a lot of what Neil says. Both programs are in a similar spot. For Tennessee, I think what a lot of people don't realize about Tennessee's 4-8 season last year, 0-8 in the SEC, is that was the worst season in Tennessee history. And that's not hyperbole. That is literally Tennessee had never not won. Tennessee had never had a season where they won less than 5 games. They never had a season where they lost more than 7 games, and they've never had a season until last year where they were winless in the conference. By any empirical measure, last season was the worst in Tennessee history. 119 years of playing football, and last year was the worst season. So I think Neil's right. Both programs are kind of in a similar position. New coaches kind of trying to get out of a decade of dysfunction is what we call it in Knoxville, or I think, Neil, you said a decade of how'd you describe it?
Mm-hmm. But Florida's been in the wilderness for a decade.
The wilderness, yes. Yeah. Getting out of the wilderness for a decade. Tennessee's had a decade of dysfunction with the Kiffin fiasco and then the Dooley fiasco and then the absolute Jones fiasco. So, but I don't know that this game is the most important game in a decade. And here's why: because both programs have a new coach. Both of those programs are on their first year with that new coach. So fans of both schools know that there is a 2 or 3 year rebuild coming. So they have both coaches have a grace period of at least a year. Both coaches are transitioning. Dan Mullen's bringing in a different offense from what Jim McElwain had. Jeremy Pruitt's a defensive guy coming in and replacing an offensive guy. So both fan bases know that this is a total rebuild, both on the field, strategy-wise, X's and O's-wise, and from a culture perspective, both X's and O's and Jimmy's and Joe's, a complete rebuild for both teams. Certainly, it's a very important game. You know, I wrote a very similar article in 2016 about why this game was important for Tennessee, and I thought if Butch Jones could win that Florida game, it would propel the program back to national relevance. I was absolutely wrong because we did win the game, and then, you know, 5 weeks later against South Carolina was the beginning of the end of the Butch Jones era. That was the Jalen Hurd game. We lost to South Carolina when we should have won the SEC East that year. Then we went on to lose to Vanderbilt instead of winning the SEC East. I think you guys won it. Right. So maybe the reason why I'm not buying into the concept that this is the biggest game in decades because I've been burned on that once, and maybe I don't want to be burned on again. But I think both fan bases know that both these coaches have a year. It's a complete rebuild, X's and O's, and Jimmy's and Joe's, both on the strategy and in the mentality in the locker room. So I think maybe next year might be the biggest Tennessee Florida game in 10 years, but I'm not so certain it's this year.
Guys, a question I'll pose for both of you, and I don't know if I'm looking at it the right way or wrong way here. I see this as it's a huge, you know, not long term. I won't ever put this game as a long term outlook on Pruitt or Dan Mullen, but Mullen being proven, being at Mississippi State, being a head coach for, you know, 8-9 seasons now, it would be hard to fathom and hard to accept that he went and lost to a first year head coach.
Yes, you know, I do agree with what Neil said. I think there's a little bit more riding on this for Tennessee than for Florida. But here's the reverse of that. You know, you think you know what you've got in Dan Mullen. He's a coach who had success at Mississippi State, where the resources, you know, at Florida the resources are infinite, or at least they should be. You know, at Mississippi State it's not that way. So what he did at Mississippi State, I think, was a great coaching job. So I think the Florida fan thinks they know what they have in Dan Mullen, a proven coach. Well, we've seen this before. We've seen coaches who were proven at other schools come into their new schools and not have success. You know, with Tennessee fans, they really don't know what they have in Jeremy Pruitt. So maybe the level of expectation isn't lower. Maybe the level of expectation is different for Pruitt. You know, so maybe Tennessee fans think that he's learning how to be a head coach, much like Kirby Smart did his first year. Remember, Georgia was maybe two or three plays away from having an abysmal first year under Kirby Smart. They were also two or three plays away from having a 10-win season. That was a ridiculous season for Georgia his first year. So I think maybe the level of expectations are different for Jeremy Pruitt than they are for Dan Mullen, and that might not necessarily work in Mullen's favor. I think there's a certain level of expectation, having been a previous coach and what he did at Mississippi State and what he's done before at Florida, that might kind of shape the narrative of what the Florida fan has going into this game against two new coaches.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to that. The one thing I'd add is that, you know, we obviously live at a time where narrative matters more, which is another reason that I think this game is one that Mullen really needs, is because Florida hasn't been 0-2 in the SEC since 1986. They've already done one thing this year that they haven't done since 1986, lose to Kentucky. So, you know, we'll see how that second step goes. But Florida fans, I think, you know, they understand, for the most part, they understand what type of job Mullen did at Mississippi State. And there's a sense that he's really ready for prime time. He's got two things that are kind of working in his favor and yet working against him. You know, things can be two things. The one thing that's helping him recruiting wise, I think, and could down the road, is there appears to be dysfunction setting in Tallahassee. Now, you go to Knoxville Saturday night and lay an egg against Tennessee. You're 0-2 in the SEC. Your wins are against Charleston Southern and what appears to be a pretty bad Colorado State team. You got to get a start next week. That's an L. You got to go to play LSU at home early October. Looked like maybe that was a dub earlier in the season. I'm not sure. That might be an L. So you're looking at Nashville against a Vanderbilt team that just played Notre Dame tight as your first conference win. You're 0-4. And everybody's like, well, at least we're not Florida State. Well, you haven't beaten Florida State in almost a decade, in almost, what's it now, Dave, 6 years?
2012, yeah.
Yeah, you haven't won that game since 2012, and now all of a sudden you can't win in Knoxville. You're 0-4 in the conference, and you're ready for prime time, guys. It's sniffing vulnerability in year one. Narratives matter. I mean, that's why, you know, that's kind of why I think there's some pressure on Mullen, but it might be that pressure where if he wins, it's a relief. Like Steve Spurrier used to say at the end of his tenure, one of the reasons he knew it was time to go is he was more relieved to win than he was happy. And nobody suffers winning like Florida fans. Florida fans might be like, we're pleased that we won. What a relief. But if they lose, then the noise. The noise always cranks up in Gainesville faster than you think it will.
And, you know, oh, by the way, with Florida, you know, if Florida and Florida State are down, you know, they're getting attacked on the recruiting front from all directions. You've got USF, UCF, and Miami, you know, really hitting the Orlando, Miami, and Tampa markets really hard. And then if you go an hour or two, well, I guess 3 or 4 hours north, you've got Georgia, and another hour after that, you got Clemson and Tennessee all hitting the Atlanta market. And then if you go 2 or 3 hours northwest from Tallahassee, you're at Auburn. So,
well, let's not forget either Clemson and Alabama, a lot of their success in the state of Florida recently too.
Yeah. So, you know, so that Florida market with UCF and USF really growing, and of course with budgets the way they are now, it's very easy for Tennessee and Clemson and Alabama to fly into Florida and get some of that talent. I think you're absolutely right there with the identification of winning being such an important recruiting tool in what is historically a Florida base, their home state, but it's ultra competitive now with what you have five top teams there, FAU, UCF, USF. So you really have six teams, FSU, Florida, and then Miami rounding out. So you got 10 big time programs, or I'm sorry, six big time programs there just in state schools, not to mention the other teams in the Southeast who it's fairly cheap to fly in there and poach kids out of.
All right, Mike, anything else you got for us there on this game Saturday night?
No, it was a pleasure. I hope some of your fans get a chance to go up to Knoxville and experience that, particularly if you got any Gator fans who have never been to a night game or been to a game in Knoxville. It's one of the great cathedrals of college football. It's, you know, some great history there and a great rivalry. I hope some of your fans get there and see it. Hope for a great game. And, David, it's been a pleasure getting back with you and joining you again on Gators Breakdown. Really happy to see all the success you're having. You're doing a great job.
All right, thanks very much, Mike, and we'll bring you on again, I'm sure.
Maybe we should catch up after the game. We'll see.
We'll try that.
All right, Dave.
Thanks, Mike. All right, Neil, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, let's talk some Gators here. Neil, what do you think? You know, so far, you know, I was telling Mike, you know, it's really hard to get a read on this game. I don't think we know what to expect from Florida. I don't think we know what to expect from Tennessee. I don't think we know what to expect from this Florida defense that 2 weeks ago didn't look the part. Can they improve on the thing? Look, they did show improvement last week. You know, things you could still see. You know, they were disciplined. They were in their gaps much more sound than they were against Kentucky. But, you know, we know it's different. It's Tennessee. It's the first road game. You know, so that's probably one of my biggest questions is how did this team react on the road?
Yeah, I think that's a big one for me. Is I wrote an article about Felipe Franks today, and just, you know, it's his third road start, I think. So 1-1 on the road, but of course the victory came in a game he was benched. His numbers on the road aren't terrible, actually. You look them up and you're kind of like, all right, those are reasonable. His completion percentage is on brand, about 53-54%. And then he's got, you know, he's got a couple touchdowns and a pick. But I think, you know, what do we get from him? One thing we've seen that's always important on the road is you know, how does a quarterback pick up protections? How's he changing protections? How's he see blitzes? You know, Felipe Franks showed marked improvement in that in game one and game two, but it's a whole different animal to do it, you know, in the swamp versus doing it in front of 100,000 plus at Neyland that are frothing at the mouth for you. I think, you know, that's a big one. And then can Florida stay consistent tackling like they were last week? Was that a 1 week fix because they went through some hell week type tackling drills? Or, you know, or is that going to be their identity? Hey, we've cleaned this up. You know, those are pretty big questions for me. And then obviously you guys have talked about it ad nauseum. I think we've all written about it. But, you know, what does Florida want to be in the running game?
Yeah. You read my mind. Look, that's what I was going to ask you about next. So go away.
Yeah.
Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah. What do they want to be in the running game? And I think this is the best, you know, with all due respect to Josh Allen, who's a great linebacker, probably the best linebacker Florida's played. This is probably the best set of linebackers Florida's played. And certainly, you know, Tennessee was porous up front last year, but it's not a talent issue. I mean, you know, Kyle Phillips can play. Tuttle, he can play. Congbo can play. So they've got dudes. who does Florida want to be? Do they want to be physical at the point of attack? And then, you know, you guys have talked about, you know, the running back rotation. Is it easier for Coach Knox now with Davis gone, or is it time to just say, hey, Damian Pierce is a guy and we got to get him worked in? And, you know, so I think those are kind of the, you know, it's simple to say you got to tackle and you got to be physical at the point of attack to win a football game. But this is the SEC on the road, so you got to do those things.
Yeah, and another thing, we had a good question on the last podcast, or it was sent to us, and I can't remember when I brought it up. It was Sunday's episode, and it was like, you know, we've been through three games so far. What is the identity of this team? And I don't think we know that yet. Is it?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't need to be Felipe Franks throwing 38 times like he did against Kentucky, but it was there. They saw it. That it was probably it may have been in the game plan, or that's what Franks was checking to a lot of the times, and that's, you know, in scenarios. Look, there was times he was looking to the line of scrimmage and checking to a play that they were sending in from the coaching staff. So, you know, I don't think it was by accident he threw for 38 games, but I don't think that's necessarily a formula to win for Florida.
No, I mean, I don't. And I think, you know, hopefully the interior of the line shows more improvement with Brett Hedgie playing more snaps, because I still think this is a football team that can be physical, that we've seen them do it against a physical front only a year ago when they pushed LSU around for 2.5 quarters and then stopped doing what they were doing. and you know, Pinheiro misses the extra point and however you want to chalk that up. But, you know, Florida can be physical. They've shown it in the last year with this personnel group. So is that who you want to be? I think so, because I think you have to take the market improvement that Franks has shown and say, look, young man, you're doing a heck of a job adjusting to being a game manager. We don't want to have to put things on your shoulders yet that it's just not fair to put on your shoulders. And for me, with the talent that they have at running back, that just seems like, you know, the logical step to take. But I guess, you know, we'll, like you said, we'll find out. It's hard to tell based on the low snap count last week, you know, if they wanted to get back to a physical running game type identity, or if that's just we only had 44 snaps because we couldn't get any first downs in the first half.
Yeah, so that 44 snaps really does have it does throw you for a loop of what the team, because you know, in 44 plays and with the way the special teams was going, whatever game plan you probably had went out the window.
Right.
I mean, you were starting so many drives, you know, in the red zone already. And, you know, if you had any scripted plays and all that, you know, all that kind of stuff probably went out the window with what was going on there. So, Neil, I don't know if you would kind of maybe be surprised by the results here. Look, you know, of course, a lot of my Twitter followers are Florida fans. Of course, they're going to be here. But I did throw up the poll question. What is your prediction for Florida versus Tennessee? And at 1,500 votes, 51%. There were four choices here, but 51% said Florida wins close. So, you know, even Gator fans see a close fall contest here, and of course they should. Or it was 34%, Florida wins by 10+. 12%, Tennessee wins close, and only 3% saying Tennessee wins by 10+. So, you know, of course, you know, I think looking at the results there, I knew a lot of Florida fans were going to pick Florida winning, but many Gator fans do see this being a close game in Knoxville.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will be a close game. You know, I think there are some areas where Florida has or should have an advantage. I mean, you know, we keep waiting for this Florida front that we heard so much about in camp to step up and have a monstrous game. And obviously we saw flashes of it from Zuniga. And I thought C.C. Jefferson had some moments Saturday. What I thought mainly Jefferson did was just kind of brought some composure to a defense that had missed his leadership and David Reese's leadership. And that's with immense respect for what Chauncey Gardner is as a leader. But I think it helps to have one in the front seven and then one on the back end. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is a close football game. I do think Florida's defensive line is better. I haven't seen anything from their quarterback that, you know, Garantano, that would make me think, you know, he's going to light the world on fire against Florida's secondary. I think Florida has an advantage there. And to be honest, I think one – and, you know, I kind of wanted your thoughts on whether, you know, is Florida's struggle for an identity just sort of the coaching staff trying to figure out how to and what to do with the various amount of playmakers they have. This is from a personnel standpoint. I talked to a couple of people writing some articles about Jordan Schuyler, Scarlett, and LaMichael Pirine, but you know, the conversations drift to receivers, and many of these NFL people said there's two or three pros in that group that Florida has, you know, at wide receiver. So are they looking at that personnel group and going, you know, we just match up with people, and you know, does that complicate things? Are they still trying to figure out who they are and who they want to be as a coaching staff?
Oh, I think so. And Mullins even mentioned it before too. Look, the practice schedule. They've limited practice. NCAA's limited practice schedules from what he's been used to in years past. So that he doesn't have a lot. He didn't have a lot of time, or as much time as he's had in years past, of trying to figure out, you know, a team and what they got going on. And I do agree. You know, Florida. Look, we've talked about it. They have a stable of running backs. How would they figure that out? Well, in a way, that's kind of taking care of itself. So you got three guys now, and I'm sure they'll move Clement back unless they feel the need to really keep him on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, he can be the fourth guy after Lemons and now Davis out for quite some time now. We've talked about the potential, and that's a scary word, of course, of this receiving core, but they're held back so much from quarterback play. You know, how can you look? We see what Antonio Callaway is doing in the NFL right now already, too. So, you know, Florida's had this core of wide receivers, too, that we say has lots of potential, but held back by quarterback. And I do think they are trying to figure out how much do you get the ball to Tony? How do you figure out this rotation of running backs? How many touches does Jefferson Grimes need? How can we use Swain and Hammond maybe as possession type of receivers or red zone threats and Grimes as a red zone threat? How do you, I mean, and the numbers that tied in, there's numbers there too. I still do think they are trying to figure out what they have here. And it's going to be a lot of learning on the fly. Felipe Franks is learning on the fly. The offensive line is learning on the fly. The coaching staff is learning on the fly of figuring out how to put all these pieces together.
I agree with you. I think one thing that the Florida fans, I feel like, should be encouraged by is that a lot of this, there's a method to it. There's a plan. You know, it's hard with the 44 plays, but certainly in the first two games, it was relatively easy to figure out what they were doing and what they were seeing as a coaching staff. It wasn't, you know, the old staff would be like, well, we have a lot of playmakers and maybe we should make a list of who, and like that kind of stuff. I mean, this is big time college football. I mean, you know, so I like that there's a method to it. You know, when we do get the ball to Kadarius Toney, it's, hey, Kadarius Toney's in the Wildcat, and he's going to make four guys miss and get 8 yards, you know. And we know that that's a position we're going to put him in to succeed and that kind of stuff. We're not just throwing a bubble screen to him on first and 10 because that's what our playmaker list says to do, right? But, I think Florida has to figure out what that is. And in a lot of ways, this road game is kind of a blessing because – you don't have your first road game in Starkville against that football team in what that environment's going to be like.
Yeah, I had something on my mind. Oh, yeah, another question that was brought up today. And I asked Will this, too, and I've seen it. It's been mentioned on Twitter a good bit today, too, is Mullen holding anything back with his playbook? And as I said in the last show, I hope not, because you got a loss to Kentucky on the resume right now. So I hope you're not holding anything back. And more than likely, if we haven't seen anything or we see something new, hey, look, there might be a couple plays out there, but it's not – I don't think they were saving too much for Tennessee. It's more me, a more natural progression of the offense and installing more and more of the offense week by week.
Yeah, and Dan Mullen's history, you know, I defer to Will on – these sorts of matters, but Dan Mullen's history in terms of holding stuff back is he doesn't do it. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, when Miss State played Nickel State, they won 70-3 because they emptied out the playbook. You know, I mean,
hey, well, we saw the jump pass week one. So come on.
Yeah. They're not. No, they run their stuff. It's football. We're running it. You try to stop it.
Yeah. That's the way, I think that's the way Spurrier looked at it too. So, Will, quickly before I sign off here, you want to break down these SEC games with me right quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
Some quick thoughts on the SEC slate for week four here, going in order of these games that are being played. Hey, Georgia at Missouri. Hey, this is a big week in the SEC East, by the way. So two weeks ago we had it with Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida, Kentucky. And now this week to kick it off, Georgia at Missouri. Oh man, maybe Missouri can hang with them for a half, but it probably will look a lot like last year's game, honestly.
I think it will look a lot like last year's game. And I'll tell you what, I sent a tweet out about halfway through the Purdue game when Missouri was up big, kind of saying, oh, everybody's sleeping on Missouri. Look how good Drew Locke is, Terry Buckner, and that defense is flying around. And then they gave up about 600 yards after the tweet. So to 2-0-3 Purdue.
It's funny how that works out, right?
And I was worried I was going to end up on freezing cold takes, and then they won the game. Yeah, I like Georgia by 3 or 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, okay. Kent State, Ole Miss, not much to see there. Let's see if Ole Miss can really just bounce back.
Bet the over.
There we go. Yeah, there's, I'm sure they want to feel better about scoring only 7 points last week to get that Alabama defense. Neil, there's Jimbo. Can he do it again? Does he have anything for another top-ranked team? Alabama host Texas A&M, and as I said, 2 weeks ago, Jimbo almost had everything together and upset Clemson. I still think this Alabama team is a different monster at this point in the season.
You know, he does not. What I want to see in this game, I hate to be the – what I want to see in this Gary Danielson mode, but what I want to see in this game is this is the first legitimate defense with athletes that has game plan for Tua. So,
okay, yeah.
What does that mean? We'll find out.
That's exactly what I wanted to see, because you didn't have a lot of film on him last year, and the most film you were going to ever have on him was the second half of the national championship game. What will teams do once they get film on him? So there's that last half against Georgia last year, and now a few games on the resume. And you're right, they didn't really – Texas A&M didn't have to concentrate on Louisiana Monroe last week, I think. Too much, right. They could spend 2 weeks prepping for Alabama there. So yeah, that's a good point there. Especially early on, what they can do there with Tua. South Carolina at Vanderbilt. I'm torn on this game as much as I'm torn on Florida Tennessee right now. Carolina, the shellacking of Georgia a couple weeks ago. Game canceled last week against Marshall. Vandy woulda, shoulda, coulda beat Notre Dame last week. Had a chance late. This is another tough game to call.
Yeah, they're salty. The doors are salty on defense, and Kyle Shermer is really good. I don't know if Jake Bentley's really good or not. I know he played a great game in the Outback Bowl. I like the Commodores in an upset at home.
I think I might be leaning it too. I think part of it is have they bounced back after the Notre Dame game. I'm sure a lot went into that game. Yeah, they're a better looking team than I expected to see through. Look, they kind of started the same way last year. They blew up teams. I think they went to Kansas State, or Kansas State went to there and they won.
Yeah,
everything was riding high, and then they played Alabama and it all came crashing down. So we'll see if they can keep it going this year. Mississippi State, Kentucky, kind of a sneaky game. Maybe it's at Kentucky, 7 o'clock. Both teams look pretty physical so far this year, but still think in the end Mississippi State's gonna be too much.
Yeah, I think they're just too good. Kroger Field will be electric. That'll be a fun one to watch. I do a lot of, you get home from church and I'll be like, which SEC game am I gonna watch on Sunday? The Jags play at 1, so probably about 5 o'clock. But I'll be like, strap in for some Kentucky and Miss State.
Man, the SEC Network needs to hire some people who would do those one-hour condensed versions. They're running one-hour games all day on Sunday.
One-hour YouTube version, right?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, somebody get them up really fast. Louisiana Tech, LSU, not much to see there. LSU is just pretty much can they keep it going, keep the foot on the pedal for a week after a big win against Auburn. And then, speaking of Auburn, to end the SEC slate, Arkansas at Auburn. And, Neil, what a terrible look for Arkansas right now.
I didn't like the hire, and I also didn't realize that Bielema just didn't leave anything behind. So,
and even if he did, it's still a completely different style of offense.
yeah, exactly. It's a totally different offense. And people that, I think there are some people that are fascinated by the hire, and I think a lot of that was about Chad Morris's ability to access Texas and recruiting without paying much attention to the results at SMU, which just kind of
Neil, you got a prediction for Florida Tennessee you want to share, or are you just
I think Florida wins on an Evan McPherson field goal that is called good. from 38 yards.
Hopefully it's not questionable and it's not the same crew that we had in Gainesville a couple weeks ago. hopefully. I'll have to look that up. I'll have to see. I do. Now you've piqued my interest. I really want to go see if I can figure out who the ref crew is. And I want to make sure it's not the same one from two weeks ago. And if anything, maybe Mullen can say or request he doesn't want that crew again. So.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, Dave, it's awesome to talk to you. Big fan of Gator Sprague. Thanks for all you do to support and promote Gator football.
Hey, thank you, Neil, so much for joining me here. I'm definitely going to get you on again. Good info out there you can get, Neil. Neil, what's your Twitter handle out there? People can follow you?
I'm at NW Blackman, so pretty easy.
All right, and you can follow his work on Saturday Down South. And if you're big soccer fans, Neil, I know Neil has a lot of thoughts about the soccer out there too, right?
That's right.
All right. That's Neil Blackman from Saturday Down South joining us here on Gators Breakdown. So, guys, thanks for listening here on this episode of Gators Breakdown. Really good preview of the Tennessee Vols and Florida Gators kicking off on Saturday night. Plenty of electricity still around this game. Maybe not national, but around Florida and Tennessee, definitely. Both teams want to win this game. Both teams want to get off to a better start in the SEC. Florida, can they get to 1-1 in the conference and continue to see start 1-0 in the conference? Big game for Dan Mullen, I think, when it's all said and done. Can't go 0-2 in the conference, especially with Mississippi State, LSU coming up. Got to get a W. Got to get a win in Knoxville. So hopefully, by the time we talk Sunday, remember, there will be a reaction episode on Sunday where we'll kind of review the game. But hopefully when we review and look at that game, we are talking about a Florida Gators win. People will probably ask me for my prediction. I think it's going to be pretty low scoring here, so I'm going to go 20-17. And hey, look, you've heard me say it many times in this podcast. I try to be fair, try to be unbiased for the most part. But when everything is, I see it kind of even, I'll let my bias take over there. So there we go. 20-17 Gators win. And I like Will's there thought. Is it going to be a late field goal? Or Neil's thought there, late field goal by McPherson kind of makes a lot of sense right now. And as I said, hopefully it's not that same crew that was in the swap 2 weeks ago, and they'll call this one good if it actually is good. So Gators win, I think, 20-17, and hopefully that's the way it comes out. So guys and girls out there, you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC and Gators Breakdown, iTunes, Google Play, newsforjacks.com/GatorsBreakdown. That's how you can find Gators Breakdown. And thanks for listening to this episode, and we'll see you guys later. Go Gators, beat Tennessee.